This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
15th and 16th at Tom McCall Park. More information about the Portland Pride Festival and Parade can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:30. Coming up next, it's Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Art and Craft, a creative community in Portland. OCAC invites you to its open house for undergraduate degree programs on June 22nd at 1 p.m. You can RSVP at www.ocac.edu.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Michael Embacher. He's an architect and designer from Austria and a bike collector. And his collection of 220 bicycles have been sorted and transported to Portland, and they make the basis of Cyclepedia, the new show at Portland Art Museum. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
You said that you started collecting bicycles based on an unfulfilled wish. You saw a bike in a shop window when you were a kid.
When I was 14, I saw a beautiful bike in a window, but I couldn't afford that. And this bike I found 4 years ago, and now it's in my collection. Perhaps this was the beginning of the collection with 14, but really it started 2003 when some new bicycles which I bought, they were stolen, and then I decided only to buy used ones. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised about the variety on the web, and therefore I began to buy more than I needed.
And you were buying them online, used?
The first ones I bought online, used ones. And after my first book, which was called Smart Move in 2006, people were offering the bikes, and these are the much better bikes, because sometimes I have the feeling that people look at their bicycle like a pet or something. They just love their bikes, and it's for the real good bikes, it's unusual to sell them. They want to have it to get to a good place.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like guns in America. People like to have more than one. And don't necessarily use all of them.
Bicycles are more peaceful.
Your collection grew in maybe the last 10 years to its current size?
I began 2003. At the beginning, there were only 10, 20 bicycles. Mm-hmm. And as I said, after the first book, it increased in very short time, because they were offered to me the best bikes. Mm-hmm. And since about 2 years, the collection is ready for mm-hmm. me full, because the attic where store the bicycles, there's no place anymore.
In the museum, they're in one room, and they're hung in a most amazing way. They're hung from the ceiling by wires, little steel wires that have protective plastic coating where they touch the bikes, and they're hung in a sort of what would you call that sinuous shape that goes around the room?
It's like a trail, like a bicycle trail, and they're also inclining in the curves. Mm-hmm. The cables are brake cables from bicycles, because I want to have this association. And the thing is that it's necessary that people can look at the bicycle very clearly. That's why it needs that the bicycle hang on the right level, on mm-hmm. the eye level, that you can look at it. And the reason why they are hanging, because for me the bicycle is just a very light way of transportation, or a light way to drive through the city or through the landscape. Mm-hmm. And that's why they are flying through the room.
So they're probably 3 or 4 feet from the ground, and you can really get up close. You know, people allowed to touch them?
Yes, they are. They have to. I think many, we had 2006 an exhibition in Vienna, and some people like to lick it. I don't know why, but there are some bicycle enthusiastic, and they may do that if they want.
Well, I think one of the surprises for me was that some of the bikes are dirty. You know, they've been ridden, and they have dust on them, and, you know, they have wear and tear, which is not what you really expect at a design show where everything is presented as being so pristine, you know, the way designers love everything. What, was that a conscious decision?
It was a conscious decision. I hope they are not dusty. I didn't see that. But they are dirty from riding, and this is my luxury. I have about all of the 210 or 20 bicycles, they are rideable. I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I bought them, that it's possible to ride. And it's sure that you can, it's impossible to know a bicycle after one ride. You have to use it in many times to know how it feels and how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why all are ridden, and they will be ridden in future. Now they are in the museum. It would be nice to go with the bicycles back to Europe, but it's impossible because there is the Pacific in between. But this is my luxury to use the bicycles.
Yeah. Some of them are clearly, you know, high-end bikes. Like we have this this Schauff Wall Street bike. It's yellow with those carbon fiber wheels with the three spokes and a tiny little saddle. You know, it looks like a stapler or something. What's the attraction of that particular bike?
There are many of these bikes in the collection. This is a very nice story because in the 80s, when the new material carbon arrived on bicycle fabrication, carbon fiber.
Yeah.
All the bicycle companies tried to make a well looking prototype for the press. They were not really made for serial production because they were too expensive. But it was necessary, like car producers, to have a wonderful piece that they can show and you can make good photos out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this Schauff was one of them. It was unaffordable. I think it was about $30,000 at that time, and only 10 were produced. And that's why I like these bikes. They are perfect. They can ride very, very easily, but it's too much effort for a one bike, for a bike production, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was a concept bike. It wasn't built for racing in an arena or anything.
It looks like it is a racing bike, but it looked like a mountain bike. It's just a prototype.
Mm-hmm.
But it works well. I really take it often, and it's a very stable and stiff bike.
Oh, so you'll ride it on the street?
It is not that light as expected. But it's very stiff on the other hand, and that's why it's working very fine on the street.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's another kind of high-end bike, the Lotus Sport 110.
I love that very much because for me this is a perfect example for design because the Lotus is made by Lotus, as the name says, and Lotus is well known for cars and not for bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
And the designer, Mike Boros, went to Lotus and they decided to make a completely new bike with a new carbon fiber material, and they wanted to win everything possible, and they did. And therefore, I think it's a perfect design. You don't need to have another shape. You don't need to have other ideas. It's just the thing that you need to work hard and to try to reach your aims. And that's design. It's not that it should look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It should fulfill their aim.
So this was built to break records.
And it did, many of them. Chris Boardman won on this bike each possible record where he started in. The thing was, after this inflation of records, the UCI, this is the International Cycling Association, they forbid that bicycle or these forms in bicycle race in a bicycle race, because they were afraid that cycling sport is like the Formula One. That means that the material is more important than the driver,
mm-hmm.
and that's why it is history. This bike.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, the eye-catching ones are there's a bicycle with an ice skate instead of a front wheel, and it has a studded rear tire, a bit like ice speedway, you know, in those motorbikes that you race on ice. How did you come across that? And what's it called?
It's called Ice Bike. It's a usual street frame, and an elderly man in Vienna turned that to the skating bike. And I used it on the frozen lake of Neusiedler See. It's outside Vienna. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fantastic feeling because it was foggy outside, very cold. And the ice of the sea was also white, like the air. And there was no horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was like rebirthing. I don't know how that would be, but it looked like that. It was a fantastic feeling, really,
mm-hmm.
to drive over the lake without any horizon and without any end.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult to find back.
Basically, he took the front wheel off and welded on a skate to the, like an elongated fork.
He didn't weld it. It's adjustable because it depends on the rear wheel, because the skate has to be perfect on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's welded, it isn't adjustable.
Oh, okay.
And for the curves and for it has to be adjustable.
Mm-hmm. What does it feel like riding it?
It's like flying, because you don't touch the ground on a longer path,
mm-hmm.
because the skate is very thin, and the spikes on the rear wheel have touched the ground in millimeter, and that's why you hear a bit of a crunchy noise. But it's running very well.
Do you feel like you're sliding, like you're slightly out of control?
It isn't. It's very good rideable, because the spikes are very sharp, and you have to also sharpen the skater, mm-hmm. in the front. And I think it works pretty well,
mm-hmm.
better than it looks like.
In your presentation at the museum, there was white space between the slides, but on that one, what looked like a white space had a kind of very faint dotted black line across the middle. And what was that?
This is the horizon. This is not a photo. I made it afterwards on my copy machine with a pencil. But this was my feeling when I...
Oh, okay. So it's like a drawing of what you saw.
It's a drawing what I saw, yes.
Okay. So the sky was white.
The ice was white. And because I was very fast, it was foggy at all. It was completely foggy,
mm-hmm.
and that's why the horizon, I couldn't see the horizon very clearly.
Right, and it was disorienting.
It was disorienting, yes.
Right. Do you use bikes to get lost, to wander?
I don't know. I just use my bikes every day for my sites and for my work. I don't think I used them to get lost. It's just, it's a bit like the quotation of Arthur Conan Doyle,
mm-hmm.
that I love to ride my bicycle, and for me it's a fantastic free time between meetings or between sitting in the office and going to the site, because it's like vacation to sit on the bicycle. But I'm not a bicycle racing driver,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a bicycle geek. I love bicycles because they are perfect products.
Mm-hmm.
But in our free time or leisure time, my wife and me, we go with tandem around Vienna, and we just love it. But it's not, we don't make bicycle journeys all over the world.
Mm-hmm. You say you're not a bicycle geek?
It sounds crazy when you have 220 bicycle, but I'm just convinced about the product, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I love it. But I accept also people if they don't like bicycles and like driving cars or railway. For me, it's a perfect form of design and a perfect form for transportation. That's it.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO. This week's guest is Michael Mbaka. And his bicycle collection has made up the show Cyclepedia, which is running now at the Portland Art Museum. Michael, there are other oddities, and it's always good to look at the odd bikes. There's a British paratrooper bike. It looks like it's collapsible. So, you know, it's a big, clanky, old greenish-gray bike. It's got bolts in the frame, so presumably it came apart. Can you tell us what they did with that?
This was made by BSA, which is a small producer in England, mm-hmm. in Birmingham.
Birmingham Small Arms.
Small Arms. And they made it for the Second World War because it was first used in the famous D-Day when the English troops went to France. And this bicycle is a very fantastic invention because it had its own parachute. It was thrown out of the aeroplane, and it gave the soldiers the possibility to move very fast when they land in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very stable bike. It has big wheels. That's why it's very perfect for bad terrain. And it's, for me, it's a perfect construction for what it should be used. It's amazing that a bicycle can help to win wars.
Mm-hmm. When it landed, it didn't get damaged. It didn't get damaged.
It hung upside down on the parachute,
uh-huh.
and the saddle and the steering came out of the tubes, and the bolts were not screwed heavily. That means the saddle and the steering they helped that. Bump on the ground is not too heavy.
Oh, so they absorb the shock.
They absorb the shock, and that's why it's a really good production.
Mm-hmm. So Tommy would put his bike together and go pedaling off across the fields of France with his rifle.
That was the idea.
I guess it worked.
It did. I heard that even the Japanese people used that in Korea.
There are also a lot of folding bikes, and I always think of architects when I see folding bikes, because just architects seem to love them, and they love the efficiency of being able to, you know, take them on the tube and take them in the back of the car.
I think this is the future of cycling, because many bicycles are stolen in the city,
mm-hmm.
and or they take parts away from the bicycle when they stand outside, and at the moment, like the Brompton or Bike Friday, the folding bicycles are done very well.
Mm-hmm.
When you ride them, you don't feel that they are foldable,
mm-hmm.
because the former folding bicycles, always when you ride them, you think they collapse during pedaling.
Mm-hmm.
But these don't, and they are simply in 1 second they are folded, and you have them under your desk or you have it in the mm-hmm. in the flat, and that's why they're very practical. And the mechanism is getting better each year. That's mm-hmm. why I'm very convinced about that.
Can they ever fix the problem of the tiny wheels? Because what you really need is bigger wheels, right, in a bike?
No, I think you get used to that when you ride them, because the only thing is that on high speed they are not very stable, the small wheel bicycle, but you get used to that.
Mm-hmm. What you mean, if you were bombing down a hill at 30 and you had to turn, it'd be dangerous?
For me, it isn't, because I'm used to that.
Yeah.
It's just a form of trying and error. and error.
And I guess people don't really go very far, very fast on them.
No, they don't. But the Bike Friday, they are from Oregon. They are traveling bicycles. They have a bigger wheel than a Brompton, and for me they were working perfect. It's a very good product.
Could you just talk a little bit about what it's like to be a collector, getting kind of absorbed into the museum world? I mean, what kind of things have surprised you about what museums ask you to do?
Not really, because I run an architectural office since 20 years, and most of our jobs are exhibition designs.
Mm-hmm.
That means with a bicycle collection, come to the museum. It's not that I'm used to that, but mm-hmm. I know what people want me to do. That means that's not a surprise. For me, the bicycle is still not an art piece, but I think it's a perfect example to show what design is. And mm-hmm. design should be in the museum because it should be more presented how design works, what design could do on people, how design could take responsible for the environment, for the social things. And that's why I think it's okay that bicycles are in a museum, and I hope that many visitors will see the show. Mm-hmm. And I hope that many visitors change and use their bicycle.
Mm-hmm. What kind of other objects do you have around you in a home that are, you know, designy, that are like classic designs or of interest to you for their design?
It's not always particular design. I love beautiful things because they have just a kind of good atmosphere mm-hmm. for me at home. And my wife is Chinese, and we have many different things. We have Asian things at home. We have Scandinavian design at home. We have no-name design at home. Mm-hmm. It's just a collage of things we love and which we want to be surrounded with. It's not a particular way to make a beautiful home. I think everybody should find their own way to live. Mm-hmm. And design is a part of that, but it's not necessary that everything must be designy.
Oh, okay, right. The process of bringing them over, was that complicated or?
Not at all, because it's an international company who makes art transportation, mm-hmm. and we made wooden boxes for about each box. There were about 10 bicycles inside, and they were on a ship, on a container ship, and they were transported from Vienna to Portland. Mm-hmm. It was not a big effort. And after Portland, they go to Tel Aviv, to Holon, mm-hmm. to the Design Museum Holon, and the show will be opened on November.
Okay.
And they go directly there. And next week we have a big opening in Vienna in the Museum of Applied Arts. I'm very happy that the bicycles discover the world.
Mm. So you designed that the way that they're hung from the ceiling, and they hang from there's a kind of a metal track that the wire's attached to. You had it done a different way in Vienna. How was that?
In 2006, this was the first exhibition of the collection, and we've been incredibly surprised how many visitors attracted visitors the show attracted there. Mm-hmm. And it was a slightly different presentation because we hang a beam down from the ceiling, and the bicycle was standing on this beam. Mm-hmm. It looked nice, but this installation here in Portland, for me, it's much, much more flying and much more attractive.
Mm-hmm. And this one, you can walk between the bikes. They're just far enough apart between the front and back wheels that you can kind of squeeze through. And it's a nice feeling that you can get so close to them.
It's, for me, we had many exhibitions in Vienna, and some venues don't have the budget to hang them down from the ceiling, and they were on some venues they were standing on the floor, mm-hmm. but people don't like that because you have to walk around the bicycle and you have to see them directly in front of your eyes, because you can see them on the street when they're standing.
Right.
That means an exhibition should have another perspective on the things.
Right. You need to be underneath the hub if you want.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I saw a number of people kind of poking around at the gears and stuff. And there are also a lot of events around Portland connected to Cyclopedia. Have you had much exposure to Portland's bike crowd?
Not yet, because I'm only 5 days here. But I appreciate the Portland way of dealing with cycle traffic very much. In Vienna, it's not that perfect way. There is not a perfect way to ride through the city, because Vienna is a car city, and I appreciate very much how Portland is dealing with cycling.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the bike as a global object? Because, you know, China had a few of them for a while, and they're beautiful designs coming out of Europe and the States.
I see it as a global project. The thing is that in the 50s, also in Austria, the bicycle was a poor man transportation. And now people get responsible about environment, about organic things. They think about the pollution, the air pollution, and so on. And everybody wants to make his effort to get the world better. Mm-hmm. And the bicycle is a small contribution to that. And that's why I think many countries try to change and bring the people on the bicycle. There's a nice quotation of a South American major. He said, a developed country is not necessarily this country where the poor should drive cars. It's the country where rich should use their bicycle. And that's, I think, a good aim.
Yeah, I was surprised. In the book of the exhibition, Cyclopedia, there is a little history of the bicycle, and I didn't realize it. What kicked it off was kind of a famine. Everybody ate their horses, and then they needed something to get around, so they developed that kind of pedal-less thing that you see toddlers using now. And
is that many people have a good remembering to their first bicycle, because it was the first way the children can go away from their parents. Mm-hmm. And I think many people have a good reason to drive bicycle, and I hope that will be more.
And you said that another strong memory people have is of their worst crash, and that's totally true. You know, for me, I can remember trying to answer my phone as I went over a Max track and losing it.
That's it, yes.
It's a very sensuous kind of object.
But most of the accidents are self-responsible made. Mm-hmm. On the bicycle. And I think if you use your bicycle in a reasonable way, it's a safe way of transportation. The only thing is you have to be careful during mm-hmm. driving.
Well, what's the road rage like in Europe? Because over here you get people get cut off, and you know bicyclists can get just as angry as car drivers.
It's horrible in Austria.
Is it?
Because it's like war on the street. because in Vienna we have about 6% of bicycle, and I think 40% of public transport, and the other percentage on the street is cars. Mm-hmm. And as bicycles are very low percentage, they are not really accepted, and that's a problem. I think people get on their bikes, the more they are accepted from the cars. Mm-hmm. And in the inner city of Vienna, there is a speed limit of 30 kilometers per hour. It's about 20 miles per mm-hmm. hour. And it's definitely so that the bicycle is the fastest way to get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. But the cars don't want to accept that.
Right.
That means it's just a form of... Is it jealousy?
Jealousy. You mean the drivers observe the speed limit, but they get anxious that a bicycle's passing them?
Faster. But the funny thing is, if the bicycle drivers sit in the car, mm-hmm. it's the same way around.
Oh, yeah.
They hate the cyclists. Humanity is really fantastic.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Michael Mbaka. His bike collection is the basis of Cyclopedia, which is a show running now at the Portland Art Museum. Thank you very much for coming into KBOO, Michael.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and hope to see you in the exhibition.
Andy Warhol. Scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
And now the KBOO News at noon. A drought in southern Oregon has led the Klamath tribes to call for their water rights to preserve salmon runs. This has set the tribes against cattle ranchers who also use the rivers in question for irrigation of their fields. Although the native Klamath people have long had an agreement with the federal government that provides for their first right to the water, they have never until now asserted that right. The Klamath tribe's water rights apply to flows in Upper Klamath Lake tributaries, including the Sprague, Williamson, and Wood Rivers that run through the tribe's former reservation. A burning cross is not a common sight in the city of Portland, but at 6 o'clock this morning, a 3-foot-high cross was burned at the corner of Broadway and West Burnside in the heart of downtown Portland. The cross was surrounded by traffic cones and street closure signs left over from the Rose Parade this past weekend. Witnesses reported seeing a 6-foot-tall white man between 30 and 50 years old lighting the cross on fire. According to police, it was made out of tree branches that were tied together with trash. The U.S. Congress passed a $500 billion farm bill last night after delaying the passage of the bill since early December. Some groups, like the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, say the bill provides unjustified corporate handouts to big agribusiness companies, locking in subsidies for the next 5 years. According to U.S. PIRG, this bill continues the current practice of disproportionately subsidizing the largest agribusinesses, which are already profitable and don't need taxpayer handouts. The group says that although the big agriculture lobby claims to stand up for small farmers, 74% of farm subsidies have gone to just 4% of agribusinesses.